Hello everyone, Tony here from the Coin Club Podcast. Just wanted to let you know that I use Mint Mobile for my mobile phone service provider. I recently switched and couldn't be more happy with the service that I have and the coverage. I urge you to check it out for yourself. Their easy-to-use website has a coverage estimator to show you how strong the signal will be in your location. No more guessing that it might be a good switch for you before you end up choosing a different carrier. They have an easy-to-understand plan structure, and they actively try to save you money if you buy a plan that you don't need. That's right, you heard that right. A cell provider looking out for your best interest. Well, please, do me a favor, check them out, and use my promo code when you sign up for Mint Mobile. I'll get some free Mint, and if you use the promo code, you get a $15 credit to your account as well. Ryan Reynolds made everything easy with Mint Mobile except the referral code. So please check it out in the show notes and use that link. Sign up, support the show, and get a credit for your new Mint account as well. Welcome to the Coin Club, a podcast brought to you by the Seven House Coins Currency Bullion, where we discuss everything related to numismatics. I'm glad to have you along with me for my journey and excited to share with you the very best of numismatics. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 11 of the Coin Club Podcast. I hope you've been enjoying your summer months so far, and if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, hang in there. You're only a little bit away from having some nice fun in the sun. Coin shows are ramping up right about now in the United States as we come out of our family vacation times and get the kiddos back to school. It's been an interesting summer in regards to the coin market, for sure. Shows just started to come back, and online sales are still on fire. People cannot get enough of the hobby, and it shows. Dealers are having a difficult time trying to keep stock in their stores, and our online favorites are feeling the pinch as well. Typically, the fall season is when we see the largest uptick in shows here in the United States. I guess the reasons are different for everyone. I tend to think that they're getting ready for the holidays and that they want to give their favorite coin collector a nice numismatic gift. Some say it's because people have a little more money at this time of the year available to spend on their hobbies. They're not on vacation for the most part and can afford a little extra. Either way, folks, whatever your reason is for putting a little extra money into the hobby, we're all grateful for it. It's nice to be able to get out and see our coin collecting friends and talk about how life is going and our newest acquisitions. What are your favorite shows to attend from now until the end of the year? I would say that mine is the Baltimore Whitman Show. I love it. I make a whole day of it with visiting one of my favorite breakfast spots in Baltimore before the show and then spending all day perusing the dealers' tables. Let me know what your favorite show is. Send me a direct message on Instagram or Facebook or send me an email. I would love to hear from you. Well, we passed that 10-episode mark, and I hope you enjoyed the last one. I truly appreciate all of the sharing and word-of-mouth advertising you all have been doing. The best way to grow, in my eyes, is to have your listeners tell their friends how much they like the show and that they should listen as well. Continue to send me emails with your suggestions and thoughts on content for the show. On this episode of the Coin Club Podcast, we're going to set out to give you the latest and greatest in the world of numismatic news. I'll share with you a coin from Venezuela for our World Coin Spotlight section, and we'll wrap up with our tour of the mints from the United States with the ones that have come and gone and now grace the pages of our numismatic history books. In the world of numismatic news, the United States Mint will be releasing some new offers between now and the next podcast. On August 31st, the release of the New York $1 Innovation Coins will take place. You can purchase a 25-coin roll from the Philadelphia or Denver Mint for $34.50 or a 100-coin bag for $117.50. This coin features a design that showcases the Erie Canal. It connected Lake Erie to the Hudson River, a 363-mile-long man-made waterway. This engineering feat was completed in 1825. These coins weigh in at 8.1 grams and are made of a planchet consisting of 6% zinc, 3.5% manganese, 2% nickel, with the balance in copper. September 2nd, we'll see the 2021 American Eagle 1-ounce palladium proof coin. Struck at the West Point Mint, this coin contains 0.9995 palladium and weighs in at 31.12 grams. It is a $25 denomination proof coin minted at the West Point Mint. The mintage limit is 12,000 and there will be a household limit of one per household. The obverse will look very familiar to many Mercury dime collectors as it features a high relief likeness of the Winged Liberty design by Adolph A. Weinmann. The reverse design, in my opinion, is gorgeous. It features a 1907 American Institute of Architects gold medal reverse, also designed by Weinmann. The price isn't listed at the moment, and for some of us, it will be far outside of our price range for collecting. However, check out the photos. It's a very, very nice coin. September 9th, we'll see the release of the 1-ounce 2021 American Eagle Silver Uncirculated Coin. Minted at the West Point Mint, this 3/9 fine 1-ounce silver coin with a product limit of 175,000 coins. Limit of 3 per household. I'm smelling a sellout here with this one. What do you think? The price is listed at $67. Lastly, on September 13th, they will release the 2021 American Eagle 1-ounce Silver Reverse Proof 2-Coin Set Designer Edition. In this set, you will receive one of the originally designed eagles minted at the West Point Mint and one of the new design eagles minted at the San Francisco Mint, each featuring a reverse proof finish. The price on these are set at $175 with a product limit of 125,000 and a household limit of 1. Heritage Auctions, the world's largest collectibles auctioneers, have announced that they have surpassed the 1.5 million online bidders on their platform. If you haven't checked out their website, it's recommended to do so. They have a huge database of coins as well as antiques, collectibles, art, and the like. They have some of the most coveted coins in the hobby for sale, and you might even find one you've been looking for at one point on one of their auctions. Check them out at www.ha.com. As of this podcast, they have a total of 44,573 auctions listed on their website. They also have an outstanding showing at the 2021 World's Fair of Money auction. A total of $68,776,095 worth of coins were sold at this auction. Crazy! This auction saw some record-setting numbers for sure, breaking previous ANA auction records from 2008 of $41 million for U.S. coins. This year, they sold a total of just shy of $49 million. The WorldCoin portion of their auction also set a record as it saw an increase from 2020 at $11.1 million to just shy of $20 million on this go-around. Alive and thriving, folks. That's what the hobby is doing. Lastly, from Heritage, you won't want to miss their September 16th auction of proof-like and deep mirror-proof-like Morgan Dollars and VAMs. I'm a sucker for Morgan Dollars. How about you? Speaking earlier of shows returning to the scene, here's a popular one for you. The Long Beach Expo Coin, Currency, Stamp, and Sports Collectible Show will take place September 30th through October 2nd of this year. After a lull of 18 months due to the pandemic, this show is back. An extremely popular show within the community, you can expect hundreds of dealer tables, exhibits, auctions, and educational sessions throughout the show. I love to travel, and I can see myself planning a trip out to California for a vacation at some point and working around the show. What better than having a nice, relaxing vacation and being able to go to a coin show for a day while you see the new sights? I think that would be a pretty nice trip. The ANA Money Museum has announced that a very important donation of George Washington medals has been made from rare coin dealer Dwight Manley. Manley has donated over 850 medals to the museum that consist of gold, silver, and copper pieces, previously belonging to the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, and some of Manley's private collection as well. Part of the private collection that was donated by Manley was acquired from the late William Spahn Baker collection. A prominent 19th century numismatist and researcher who lived from 1824 to 1897. All said, the collection features more than 1,000 medals and coins and will be known as the Baker Manley Collection. If you would like to read more about this collection, head on over to the ANA's website, www.money.org. They go over some highlights of the collection as well. Being a part of the ANA with a yearly membership will bring you a wealth of benefits. I encourage you to head on over there and join. It costs as little as $16 for a youth membership, and other options are available at a cost of $30 and $46. Check it out. PCGS has announced that they have certified an extremely rare 1454 medal, which commemorates the end of the 100 Years' War. The 100-year war started in 1337 with some spat between royalty over in France. Well, it's not that simple, really. However, I couldn't do a description of it justice. Head on over to PCGS.com and read their extremely detailed account of the war and the coin itself. This coin that was certified was just one of 8 different types struck and sold at auction for $51,000. For all of you who choose PCGS as your grading company of choice, you'll want to be sure to take advantage of their grading specials this time around. If you didn't know, they offer specials throughout the year, so check out their website from time to time to see what's hopping. Get in before September 30th with a submission of 5 or more coins to get their limited edition 35th anniversary silver box. Also with the deadline of September 30th, you can take advantage of their Canadian banknote submission. Take up to $15 off per note. Variety attributors will like this next one. Take $6 off a successful variety attribution and $3 off on those that do not qualify. The other top 2 grading company, NGC, has announced award winners from the ANA World Fair of Money. 10 awards to be exact. First place for the Heath Literary Award for their Birth of the Blue Folder from the December 2020 issue of the Numismatist. Third place in the Waite and Olga Raymond Memorial Literary Award with their Iva Coles Carnegie Hero Medal from the March 2020 issue of the Numismatist, and third place in the Radford Stearns Memorial Exhibit Award with Matthew Campbell's Rule Britannia, Britannia's 350-year reign on British coins. Head on over to their website at ngccoin.com to see the rest of the awards. All right, friends, for the World Coin Spotlight, we're heading south to the country of Venezuela. Venezuelan coins and currency have had a storied past in regards to type, mintage, and the like. Wars, dictators, rulers, and elected officials have all changed the look and the feel of Venezuela's money. We're going to head on back to the year of 1901, just 1 year prior to the Venezuelan crisis of 1902-1903. 1901 saw the beginning of the Venezuelan debt crisis. President Cipriano Castro defaulted on millions of dollars in bonds owed to European countries. Castro refused to do anything in these debt talks, and in December 1902, Great Britain, Germany, and Italy imposed a naval blockade against Venezuela because then-President Cipriano Castro refused to pay off foreign debts suffered by European citizens in their civil wars. Venezuela's small navy was no competition to the 3 major players in the blockade, and they were quickly disabled. Germany threatened to invade Venezuela because Castro refused to back down, and in a show of force, the United States President Roosevelt, at the express request of then-President Castro, sent our navy down and threatened war against Germany if they invaded Venezuela. Roosevelt saw an opportunity to quell the fury and restore peace in this area. The blockade and tensions eased after this, and Venezuela agreed to commit 30% of its custom duties to settling the claims from the original 3 countries who imposed the blockade. The coin we're going to feature is a 1901 Venezuelan 5 bolivars. It weighs in at 25 grams and is made of 0.900 fine silver. The diameter is 37.2 millimeters, and the 5 bolivars was minted from 1879 to 1936. Although the mintage of these coins stopped in 1936, they were valid currency up until 12/31/2011, when they were demonetized. The obverse of the coin is absolutely gorgeous, with the Venezuelan coat of arms gracing the central part of the coin and taking up the majority, along with the letterings of Estados Unidos de Venezuela surrounding it. On the bottom of the obverse, it states the details for the coin, with gram 0.25, the year, and the purity of the coin, which they show as LEI 900. The reverse of the coin shows the bust of Simon Bolivar. To the left is the word Bolivar, and to the right of the bust, Libertador, and just below, Bar, the name of the engraver, Desiree Albert Bar. It has a reeded edge. Since Venezuela didn't have their own mint at this time, these coins were minted at La Monnaie de Paris and shipped to Venezuela via freighter. 1901 was the lowest mintage year of this coin at 90,000 minted total. Another neat fact about the series is that off and on, our own Philadelphia Mint cranked out 5 bolivars for Venezuela from time to time. Okay, everyone, let's head back to the United States and take a look at some mints you may not have known existed. If you're in the know and have listened to the last few episodes of the podcast, we still operate and produce coinage of Philadelphia, Denver, San Francisco, and West Point mints. Our history here in the States has also graced us with many other mints that have come and gone, and today we'll take a look at them with a quick overview of when they existed, what they produced, and any pertinent history they may have. Let's take a stroll on down to North Carolina, or North Carolina as my friends like to say down there, and we'll take a look at the Charlotte Mint. It was the very first branch mint of the United States of America. The Reed Gold Mine was the location of the very first gold mine in North America. All of this gold had to go somewhere, and the miners and prospectors sent their gold to the Philadelphia Mint. It was a very long and difficult process to get the gold up there, and the miners grew tired of it, and many local coining operations started up. The problem with this was that they were not accurate. The weights were not good, the payouts were not accurate, and the fineness was lacking. This led to the distrust of local coining operations, and as such, local merchants and miners petitioned Congress in the year of 1831 to reduce all of these woes that they faced. The federal government all but ignored the situation until 3 years later when they started to investigate the needs of the people. On March 3, 1835, Congress finally passed Act 115-60, which established several branch mints of the United States. The act stated as such: one branch at the town of Charlotte in Mecklenburg County in the state of North Carolina for coinage of gold only. It goes on to say, and for the purchasing of sites, erecting suitable buildings, and completing the necessary combinations of machinery for the branch at Charlotte, $50,000. Listen for that act number the Congress passed, as you'll hear it later. Two men by the name of F.L. Smith and William Carson sold a parcel of 4 acres of land to the United States in November of 1835 for a sum of $1,500. In today's money, that would be $46,534. Today, the location is 400 West Trade Street. Bidding on the contract to build the new mint soon ensued, and in 1836, the construction began. The builders were a company called Perry and Ligon, which were located in Raleigh. After so many years of waiting, the residents of North Carolina saw the first mint open on July 27, 1837. No more shipping their gold dust and bullion up to Philadelphia and hoping that it would arrive. Now they had their own mint right in their own backyard. Processing raw gold was the only thing going on at this location up until March 28th of 1838, when the first coins were struck. They fired up their machines and minted the first coin ever to be struck at this location, a $5 gold half eagle. $2.50 gold eagles were struck at this location as well, although this didn't start until later in the year. They were concentrating on the $5 gold half eagle. In 1849, saw the production of a gold dollar coin. Are you aware of what the mint mark would have been for this location? Well, it was a C mint mark. The Charlotte Mint shelled out over $5 million in coins over its lifetime. In May of 1861, with the secession of the state of North Carolina from the United States, the Confederacy seized the mint and continued using it for minting coins until October, when they converted it into a military hospital. With the defeat of the Confederacy, the victorious Union took back this location and used it as an office for troops during the first few years of Reconstruction of the South. 1867 saw it turn into an assay office that operated until 1913. It served as a meeting place for the Charlotte Women's Club thereafter, and also a station for the American Red Cross in World War I. In 1931, the numismatic community almost lost this piece of history to the wrecking ball, as the government wanted to tear it down to expand the nearby post office. A group of private citizens banded together to acquire the structure from the government and moved it to a prominent neighborhood a few miles south of its current location. Upon reopening its doors after the move, it is considered the very first art museum in the state of North Carolina, where it boasts a 15,000-volume library and thousands of articles for visitors to look at, including every gold coin minted at the mint. The next mint we'll take a look at is the Dahlonega Mint in Georgia. The same Mint Act that brought forth the Charlotte Mint created this one as well. In August of 1835, 10 acres of land was purchased just south of Dahlonega for $1,050, today's equivalent of $32,574. This story pans out just the same as the last. Gold was discovered in the area, and the citizens did not want to send their gold the whole way up to Philly and take the chance on the treacherous journey. Once the land was purchased, the bidding went out to the public, and the very lowest bidder, a man named Benjamin Towns, won the contract and started. 18 months was the period of time that was given to construct the mint, and he stated he could do it for $33,450. Today, that would be just a hair over $1 million. February 1838, the mint opened, and within the first few weeks, they saw deposits of around 1,000 ounces of gold. Imagine adding that to your stack. The first coins to be minted at this location after those large deposits were $85 gold pieces on April 17, 1838. The press that they had in the building was capable of minting around 50 to 60 gold coins per minute. From 1838 to 1861, the mint was alive and well, pumping out gold coins. Similar story to the Charlotte Mint. Once the Civil War broke out, the mint was seized and a small number of coins were made under the short occupancy of the building under the Confederacy. Once the Union rightfully regained control of the building, it sat unoccupied until its demise in December of 1878 when a fire destroyed it. Take a guess at what mint mark Dahlonega had. These coins are scarce in the realm of gold collecting. They were graced with the D mint mark. Yes, you say, well, the Denver mint mark had a D mint mark, so how could this one have that? How could you tell the difference? They weren't open at the same time, and this mint only produced gold coins. If you want to know more about the Denver mint, check out our past episode about that location. It was estimated that the mint at Dahlonega pumped out well over $6 million in gold coins, and the denominations that were issued there consisted of $1, $2.50 quarter eagles, $3, and $5 half eagles, all minted in gold. Once again, the same Mint Act provided for a third location, this one being the New Orleans Mint. New Orleans was an attractive location for the United States, as its proximity to the Mississippi River bode well for transporting and receiving. A student of the original designer of the United States Capitol named William Strickland designed and built this mint. It is located in the French Quarter of New Orleans and was built in a swampy lowland, causing structural problems early on in its life. The building needed reinforcement with steel rods and concrete floors due to the nature of the area it was built. March 8, 1838, the mint was open for business. The first deposits to this facility were of Mexican gold bullion, and on May 7th, the first coin struck at this facility worth 30 dimes. Prior to the Civil War, the mint made denominations in both gold and silver, which was different than the other two mints created by this government act. They produced silver 3-cent pieces, half dimes, dimes, quarters, half dollars, silver dollars, gold dollars, $2.50 quarter eagles, $3 pieces, and $5 half eagles. Along with that, $10 eagles and $20 double eagles also made up their role. January 26, 1861 was the last day that this mint was operating under the United States as the state of Louisiana seceded from the Union. The Confederacy used the mint to produce coinage only for a short period of time using the bullion that was still left at this location. Once this ran out, they didn't have a plan to continue operations with this facility as a mint, and they used it to house troops. The United States retook the city of New Orleans, and in April of 1862, the United States flag was raised again on the mint facility, as it should have remained all along. After the war, in 1877, the facility was reopened as an assay office. The damage was assessed to the equipment, and it was not able to continue minting coins with the condition that the machines were left in. Shortly thereafter, the government shipped new equipment down to New Orleans, and in 1879, they fired up the presses once again and began minting mostly silver coinage at this point, including one of my favorite coins, the Morgan Silver Dollar. The Bland-Allison Act of 1878 was passed, which required the government to purchase large volumes of silver. This also had a major part in the reopening of the mint. From their second official opening, New Orleans produced dimes, quarters, half dollars, silver dollars, $5 half eagles, $10 eagles, and a very limited number of $20 double eagles. One other coin that was minted at this location was the 1907 Mexican 20 centavo silver coin. 5.5 million of these coins were struck here. With the funds cut off to operate this facility by the mint, in 1909, it had to shutter its doors, stopping minting coins, and officially, in 1911, it was decommissioned as a United States mint. The mint mark on the reverse of these coins consisted of an O. During its active years, it produced over 427 million coins at this facility. It also remained an assay office until 1932, when it was repurposed as a federal prison. This usage went on until 1943. The Coast Guard used it momentarily after this as a storage facility, and then it sat empty until it was transferred to the state of Louisiana in 1965. It saw use as a fallout shelter during the Cold War, and today it is a museum for the history of the mint. What a well-used and storied structure. Surely worth a visit. Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. It was awesome to step back in the pages of history and visit the mints of the past. I hope this episode, like all others, finds you healthy and you're enjoying the world of collecting. Please share this with your friends and leave a review on your favorite podcast website. I want to give you all a heads up that there will be only one episode in the month of September. Tune in on September 20th to catch a modified show. Thanks again, and I hope to have you along with me on the next episode of the Coin Club Podcast. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Coin Club Podcast. I had a great time with you today and look forward to sharing with you on the next episode. If you've liked what you've heard, please consider supporting me on Patreon at the Coin Club Podcast. Please follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook at the Seven House Coins Currency Bullion and also on Instagram at the same name. You can also go to my website, sevenhouseccb.com, and give me some feedback on this episode or some suggestions on what you would like to see on future episodes. As always, I'm grateful to all of you for your support and look forward to seeing you the next time on the Coin Club Podcast.